Good day, and welcome to the North West Company First Quarter Results Conference Call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Edward Kennedy, President and Chief Executive Officer. Mr. Kennedy, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to our Q1 conference call. Joining me today are John King, our Chief Financial Officer, and Amanda Sutton, who is our VP Legal and Corporate Secretary. I'm going to ask Amanda to begin the call with our disclosure statement.
Thank you, Edward. Before we begin, I remind you that certain information presented today may constitute forward-looking statements. Such statements reflect North West's current expectations, estimates, projections, and assumptions. These forward-looking statements are not guarantees of future performance and are subject to certain risks, which could cause actual performance and financial results in the future to vary materially from those contemplated in the forward-looking statements. For additional information on these risks, please see North West's annual information form and its MD&A under the heading Risk Factors.
Thanks, Amanda. I'm going to start with just putting aside some of the share-based comp and insurance puts and takes. I'll leave that out of my remarks. I hope they're clear in the results, and otherwise, we'll address, of course, any questions you have, and John may step in on that. There are a couple other costs that were pulled out and highlighted by us that are somewhat non-operating. One is the insurance that we're incurring. I mean, it's operating, but it's been a big delta now. We gave guidance on where we're headed with that, 4 million dollars in additional costs this year on top of a pretty big increase last year. Our mitigation efforts, we're very pleased with. Our storm protections for hurricanes and some of the fire mitigation things we've done in Northern Canada are largely in place or will be. For example, the hurricane Cat 5 protection will be in place prior to hurricane season. Beyond that, we're going to look at every available option to look at the way we structure our insurance because we recognize that the mitigation efforts we have today will help claims experience and rates down the road. We're going to be heads down, and we'll talk more about that in the upcoming quarters on what we can do to look at the way we structure our insurance to tackle this cost. As I said at the beginning of the year, I think in the Q4 call, we do expect to grow beyond that kind of cost and still drive our earnings. Largely, we're doing that, and that leads me now into our actual operating performance. What's coming together in the way we had hoped and is a positive for us is our Northern Canadian retail business is well-positioned. We're seeing a lot of spending power that we're trying to trap in our stores. Some of that can affect gross margin rate because when we see more income, it shifts into big-ticket sales that we're positioned to provide, white goods, appliances, furniture, and motorized. Generally, we're seeing a nice lift in sales in the north, solid comp sales, and we really expect that to continue. We're trying to double down wherever we can in community by community where we see mining activity, for example, in the Kivalliq, Rankin Inlet, Baker Lake, specifically some of the Baffin Island mining development, and then the public infrastructure that's going in the north. You should expect, as we're holding ourselves to account, and we're seeing the trend in that regard, that the Northern Canadian business is robust this year. I pointed out in my annual meeting remarks this morning that the CAGR for Nunavut's GNP is between 5% and 8%, depending on who you listen to. It's the strongest economy in Northern Canada, in Canada, actually, albeit a small one. We're well-positioned there with 34, actually 38 stores. We're holding ourselves again to drive our numbers. NSA, to talk about that for a bit, it started a little slow out of the gates. We didn't have our two ATRs at the hours per month of flying that we had expected to. It's a long story that I think our investors know. The good news is that we've turned that corner. Those planes are flying. Our in-house maintenance program is kicking into gear the way we had hoped in terms of quality and timeliness of service and ultimately managing down our costs. Overall, we had a good contribution out of NSA, particularly in P2, P3, which would be March, in April, and now into May as well. So we're basically on track from here on out. We'll make up any shortfall through the rest of the year. I consider the business to be stabilized with always room for improvement and many other key decisions lying ahead on how we grow that, both of our own cargo and third-party business revenues. On the Canadian side, that leaves Giant Tiger, and this quarter we did call out Giant Tiger in terms of breaking out sales. Haven't done that for a while, if at all. And I think it may be obvious why we decided. The divergence in sales performance on a comp store basis was quite significant. It's been a trend, a negative trend at Giant Tiger that's a top priority for us to address. We know our store people are working hard. We think we're working hard on this. We can't externalize it. That's not the point, but we have to look at some partnerships, specifically with Giant Tiger Stores Limited and our master franchise, and how that structure can provide the most value for both sides of the equation, because we don't feel we're there right now with the way the agreement is going, but it's something that we sat down with Giant Tiger and we're working on together. We also have to look longer term and strategically, and as I spent a lot of time today talking about our core competencies, although Giant Tiger, the stores are very important in the food scale they bring to the business, we want to make sure that we clearly understand how they are going to drive value through our core capabilities to our shareholders and the financial returns that we expect from that business. So we're heads down on that. I'm not providing more details today. I will. You'll expect this to be a headline item with Northwest quarterly, probably not sooner, as we work through more specific details and disclose those. Moving to international, we're largely pleased with our results. Sales were strong on a comp basis. We came out of the gate sort of like NSA. The fact that there were double SNAP payments, that's the Supplemental Nutrition Allowance Program. With the government shutdown risk, there were two payments made in January, so you could say, well, that helped Q4. But in Q1, we had a core piece of income that was missing in February. So we had to kind of ride that issue. And since then, we're okay with our sales performance and bottom line. We're headed in the right direction. We've had some hiccups along the way. We're going to comp shortly the loss of a very large liquor store, and you'd think, why is that material? Well, it was. That operation that isn't in business today. We're still working on the licensing to get back into that business in Bethel, Alaska, but we're not there today. So we had to deal with that. There was some margin pressure in our Barbados business that mitigated otherwise what was a pretty decent quarter out of our international store group. We also had I should talk about a couple more things. The restructuring of our business, that's going to be about $4 million Canadian, specific to the closing our Bellevue office and relocating, putting that office between Anchorage, Alaska and Boca Raton, Florida. This is something that is going to take time and cost-wise over, largely now the second quarter will be the balance of those costs, but some will go into the third quarter as well. Regarding the relocation, hiring of the offices for those two locations, it's going pretty good. We recruiting into Anchorage, Alaska is a little harder. Of course, you might not be surprised, Boca Raton, Florida. But the payoff here is that we're putting people close to our customers and our markets. We're already seeing some of the advantage of that as we talk to in the South Florida market, some of the recruiting that we're doing and people we're talking to who already are part of retail systems serving the Caribbean, we're getting the feel that we're in the right place to optimize that business as opposed to being up in Seattle. And we expect the same in Anchorage once we have our office in place and stabilized. So that was a cost that we had decided to go for, and we're well underway with that. So that's some of the underlying factor to our international performance. Beyond, we have our key initiatives that we're plugging away at. No major course adjustments apart from the deeper issues that we're looking at with Giant Tiger. And we feel that externally, if we look at our consumer environment, whether it's continued construction economy activity, and if they're being a little slower in St. Martin, they have not had the tourism bounce back or the infrastructure rebuilt that the BVI and USVI are. We got one big store to get reopened in Q4, our St. Thomas store, on schedule for that, and otherwise executing our plan, which is to have a great value proposition in the Caribbean. Northern Canada has a strong pure retail focus, which is simplifying the business, staying in stock, and really improving our key role retention so that we can take advantage of the great potential we see in that market. And Alaska's kind of in between, doesn't have quite the robustness of Northern Canada, but we've got a very stable, strong market position there overall. There's one cloud on the horizon is we have a store in Barrow, Alaska that we're going to be exiting from and looking at a different arrangement in that community in terms of how we service it. So we'll give more information as we get closer to that in Q4. Otherwise, that's the overview of our performance. And I'd like to now turn the conference call to questions. Thank you.
And if anyone does have a question, please press star one on your touch-tone telephone at this time. Once again, that is star one if you have a question. And a voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. We'll go to our next caller, our first question.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yes.
Hi. Thanks. So just maybe one on the Giant Tiger in terms of just performance and outlook. Is it more the pressure on and the food side that's somewhat concerning to you? Is it the general merchandise, or is it a mix of both as you look out over the next kind of 12 to 24 months?
I'd say it's over the medium term frame, it would be the general merchandise execution, how we're gapping to Giant Tiger East in terms of markdowns and execution of our open to buy. We track how they're doing versus us, and they had a cold spring, we had a cold spring, so there were some pretty ugly numbers, but you got to look beyond that. So I think structurally, it's about the knowledge transfer and the right processes in our stores to optimize what is essentially a business system that's based on driving profit through largely soft goods, but also hard goods. That's a softer factor in terms of skill and knowledge, but it involves real deep collaboration with Giant Tiger on making sure that we're getting full value from their knowledge, for example, and skill to pull this off, because we can see comparable or like-type stores where, in fact, there's better performance. They're just not the ones that we've been running lately. I think that answers your time frame, but immediately, because that is an issue today, but it's being compounded by the food performance. And I think we've some of this has been self-inflicted. We've put a big push on into fresh. We reintroduced fresh meat into our stores and dialed up our fresh produce emphasis. We're not pulling the plug on that, but if I look at the way it's turned out, and this is something that's quite short-term in terms of performance measurement, so try not to overreact, but in the last 3-4 months, since we've really gone full bore on these two programs, sales are up great. Well, meat would be, because it wasn't there at all before. It hadn't been there for a year or so. Produce is up double digits. But in terms of the cost, whether it's shrink and damage and even fresh meat, for example, theft, because of the types of stores we have in the neighborhoods and some of the risks that go with certain exposure in areas where we have stores, have very much underperformed. And we have not driven the basket growth that was the point of the whole initiative, namely that as you shop for fresh, you will fill out your basket in other parts of the food assortment and hopefully into the more profitable areas of the store. So we had to reassess that, and we're doing that right now because, it's worth trying, and it comes back to execution. And I think part of it is putting too many balls in the air, trying to turn around something that will take more focus on a few key things and not 5 or 6. So in some ways, I think we made a situation that wasn't great worse in the first 3 months, and we're now course correcting that, and it's happening immediately because of for obvious reasons. I mean, we think that the Northwest story has to be one of success for our investors and our customers, and generating free cash flow to grow a dividend, to invest in complementary businesses. The Northwest, the Giant Tiger story is not that story today, and we need to get there. So that's the way we see it.
All right, thanks. And then as you kind of look out to the top markets initiative, you mentioned in your commentary it's still a focus. Can you maybe talk about where you are on that initiative now that it's been underway for some time? You know, are you largely through it? Did you identify more opportunities in some of those top markets? Just want to update on how far along you've come and what you see still left on that.
When John gave a talk today about our investments and I think $480 million over 5 years, John?
Yes.
Yeah, so tied into that are a couple of acquisitions which are growing and accretive. One came out of the gates, Gangbusters and the BVI, and now our NSA is rounding into form. Into that CAPS was also some accelerated top markets tied just completely coincidentally, because the other implication would be illegal. They were fire and hurricane damaged stores or destroyed stores were almost all top market stores. And that's just the way it turned out. So we actually accelerated our top market spending in dollars, but not in locations, because the ones that were destroyed were large. And you know about the Iqaluit Warehouse Fire, the largest store that we have, St. Thomas, probably our second largest store. So we've had to kind of divert our CapEx, albeit funded by insurance, with a back-end cost increase that we're, as I say, trying to reduce and mitigate. So the long answer is we have a lot of noise in this program since we started it. Going forward, we're up 22 stores of, I think, 37. We've gotten some more to do, but I also said today in my remarks that we're sticking to a disciplined CapEx equals a depreciation approach as a proxy for how much we want to spend on that program. We've gone back and we've looked at how the CapEx has driven results, and on the fewer growth capital, there's a great incremental ROI. The challenge is that, and part of this is just a factor of where the stores are and the efficiency of really tearing them apart and getting the foundations literally done right when you go in to do a project. So they're big boxes, they're complicated with warehouses attached to them, and the maintenance CapEx was getting so large per project, I think people have heard this story before, that we said we're going to slow this down because we're not getting the incremental ROI, RONA, whatever you want to call it, EVA out of this. And unless we have a serious set of competitive entry or we need growth CapEx to grow the store, out of the four walls, we're going to slow the pace. So the go forward on this is to still prioritize what we call top markets. These are profitable stores. A bit of triaging in the sense that if there isn't a risk of not just imminent but likely competitive entry, if the store is sized appropriately to maximize sales over the medium term, then it gets pushed down the list. So that number that I referred to earlier, the depreciation approximately number of $65 million, is where we work back from. And we allocate that to our major SBUs, namely International, Canada, and the airline. And then they, you know, working with their executive teams, we're looking at the way they put the spend between bricks and mortar and technology, for example. Within the bricks and mortar, the overlay is that you need to take care of your top market stores. Long answer, I'm sorry, but the short one would be that this entire program will likely continue now for 4, 5, 6 years. And it probably would be something you could morph into saying, Northwest is investing in their core equal to depreciation. With the airline, that's pretty straightforward. The DA goes right back to the engines, and you take out the EBIT or the op margin. For the retail banners, they are prioritizing their top markets because that's where they can grow or protect the most. And beyond that, there's still money left over. They've got other programs in IT, staff housing. I mean, that's strategic. It sounds like maintenance CapEx, I know, but it also enables us to improve our talent attraction and retention. So that's kind of the way it's going to run. And I think the number to watch is us getting to that 65 number and being very clear, transparent, and persuasive on that the money about that is truly driving growth.
Okay, thanks. And then just one last one for me. As you talk about capital allocation, I guess how are you looking at M&A now that NSA is starting to roll along? What are your thoughts on kind of anything medium to larger size at this point?
What I did with the, if you get on the webcast and pull the slide, I show the core. I define that core as our Northern Canadian business and Alaska business, and we've been in those businesses from almost day one, 32 years, 28 years, respectively. Then I did, it's kind of, I guess, a classic, whatever, strategy frame. I tied in the adjacencies that we've extended our core into. So from a store standpoint, we went into non-acquisitions, at least, Greenfield at 45 Giant Tiger stores. And then the North Marts, 37, I think, North Marts and Quick Stock. So we expanded the Northern store larger to a North Mart and then smaller to a convenience store, and that was growth for us. And then, of course, we have 19 Cossulas and RTW stores in the Pacific and Caribbean. That was acquisition. So you're asking about the airline. I think the reality is we're likely to move into the retail space through acquisition, small, and then some organic attached to that in the Caribbean, somewhat contingent upon us being really rock solid with our competitive value offer, our value proposition. In Northern Canada and Alaska, it's likely not to be that. What I also showed were other adjacent spaces. I talked about product service extensions, 136 financial service counters, 300 ATMs, 64 post offices, 25 Tim Hortons. So there's some of that. That's not acquisition. Where the M&A kicks in will be in adjacent complementary businesses. They could back into the transportation space. They could be, because we're doing that kind of a scan right now, it's going to take a while, in other adjacent spaces that we think really leverage those core capabilities that we have. And those will likely be the M&A. So the answer here is we could go three ways. We can do tuck-in acquisitions in the Caribbean, probably that over the Pacific. We can do some tuck-ins. They won't be tuck-ins in Canada. They'll be extensions. The tuck-in would be to the airline, although we think we're set on an organic path now. As we open for business, here's our put our shingle on the wall, and we get third-party customers. We're going to add our own capacity, not necessarily buy it. The tuck-ins that would be in the north beyond that would be stores that are not within what we call our core retail format or that are not retail at all operations that we think are core extensions. And I wouldn't, as I say, give more detail on that today except to say that we're digging in and investigating. And just like the airline, I think I had a heads up for a couple of years talking about how we have to look at this space and perhaps invest in it. It all depends because it's such a thin economy, whether you're in the Caribbean or you're in the north, there aren't a lot of players in these adjacent spaces, and the timing has to be right for a willing buyer, willing seller. We prefer something not too big so we can add value through organic growth, but not something that's so small that we've got to start from scratch if there's an incumbent who knows the business well and gives us a solid base to start from. So M&A will be part of the plan. It's not imminent, but when we look at where growth will come from, it'll be this. I think the NSA model is kind of instructive. It's if we can get a base and grow from that base and really get mileage out of our core capabilities, then that's the recipe for growth beyond the retail stores themselves.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question.
Hey, it's Matt Bang at CIBC. Okay, just to continue on the Giant Tiger a little bit, can you talk about how much the competitive environment is having an impact here?
I think that there's I'll compare it to Eastern Canada. I think there's a phase to the amount of square footage that's been added to the West and discount that the East has behind them. There's not a lot of square footage to be added in retail generally and in food retail as well anywhere, but there are conversions. So the Extra Foods to No Frills and the Safeway Sobeys to the FreshCos are a discount, a conversion to discount, which is a conversion into our space. You cycle through that. Again, it's not new incremental square footage. But I'd say that's the biggest irritant we have. But I'm also prefacing that by saying we have to get the hard goods, soft goods right, and not shoot ourselves in the foot, which I felt we did with the fresh strategies that we put in place in Q1. We're going to get through the fresh dough conversions. We'll see how many actually take place and at what pace. The no frills are largely done. And I think we're not that far away from a pretty stable food environment, at least square footage-wise, in Western Canada.
Okay, and renegotiating with the franchise relationship, sounds like it could take a period of time. What's the near-term plan in terms of getting profitability turned around?
Well, first I'll say that the discussions with Giant Tiger are ongoing. They're not starting because we had a bad quarter. It's a relationship that's 18 years old, and a master franchise that's 18 years old, and one that's being revised and amended once. But I would say that's a long-term discussion. We're having them now, and we'll get value from them or we won't. It's not really something that lingers on the way we see it. The food situation in fresh can be fixed quite quickly. And by that I mean in a quarter we should see a turnaround. The margin pressures that I talked about tied to these more hard discount competition is a little trickier. And I would say that's, you know, that we could be facing that for another year. But it's not the one that really, you know, that I'll report on, and it ties back to the Giant Tiger relationship. And so what I just said about things that can happen quickly, or we can fix some things quickly, the skill transfer and knowledge about optimizing the hard goods, soft goods is not a light switch, but we're going to be looking to some signs from Giant Tiger stores that there's things we can do there that would make a difference, because we know they can make a difference for them because they have. So some of the missing ingredients, whether it's more time in Giant Tiger East stores and model stores that are paired together, that we can say that's the same kind of market. We should have a very similar approach to the business as that store that's doing so well in this other community. Getting more people that are deep in these areas than perhaps we have in our stores, not so much in the stores, but maybe in our support areas. There's more specialists in the Giant Tiger side of things, given that their focus only on Giant Tiger stores. So there's some cross-pollination that we need to see that we think will make the difference. Certainly if we felt that the whole format and approach was just a losing proposition, that'd be another story. But we are aware, we know, and we're communication and information what GT East is doing, and we think there definitely is a better path forward, so we just got to get on that. Ultimately, these are great locations, and we see them as that. Where these stores and boxes are located is very, very good. We have first mover advantage in most of Manitoba, Saskatchewan. The sites are fantastic. They've done well in the past. They should drive better sales results than they are now. So we haven't lost confidence in that factor. It's now what's really stopping us from making it work. And I don't have that answer today, but I say I'm putting, in a way, I'm putting myself on the hot seat to be, like we started this quarter with more segmented, in a way, disclosure about that business, and it's going to continue that way. So you clearly know at least what's going on, and whether you're happy or not with the pace or the answers I'm giving you now, that's just where we sit today with that business.
Okay, just to clarify a bit on the financial side of that, like in the quarter, it sounds like there was a lot of good things that happened, and the biggest offset that kept earnings down was Giant Tiger. As you think about, you know, Q2 and Q3, when North Star is fully contributing, how should we think about that balance of how much of an offset GT should be to all the other all of the other good things going on.
It shouldn't drag the EBITDA into a negative like it did, but we need some heavy lifting here in the next, like right now this month we're working on and some changes. NSA, you're right, will be a bigger positive factor. And given that it wasn't for every period in Q1, it's going to be magnified on the positive side. As I say that, we've got another month and a half to go, but that would be the expectation. Total company, we'll still have, good results from Northern Canada. We'll absorb the insurance cost. And then on the international side, as I say, we're going to take another hit on the restructuring cost. So, the GT effect should be more muted in the quarter, but there's some things we need to do now that we're working on that to ensure that. But I guess the point is the other parts of the business are going to get more positive, not less positive. GT, we expect, won't get more negative, but I'll tell you right now, May was a difficult month. We were up against 15% comps in our apparel business last year. We had a very cold month. So the apparel business was a disaster. And so there's that. But I don't really care as much as I think the real point of your question, although you're talking about quarters, I'm talking about the underlying strength of the other businesses. And I think we take away some of the one-time things like the restructuring and even the insurance when you think, okay, well, that's there and they're going to work on some bigger ideas on that. We should see some pretty strong contributions from the other Canadian businesses, specifically NSA and NCR, and then we'll see how that shakes out on the bottom line.
Thank you.
And we'll go to our next caller.
Hi, it's James Allison from Barclays. So just on Giant Tiger, so just looking at your outlook, it appears the wording that you're now targeting one new store this year, down from six in your Q4 release. It's just, I assume that this is... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry for interrupting you. I think that we made a mistake. That should be plural. And we're not down to one store. I don't know, John, if we have the issue. Correct?
So what it says is the investments include a planned GT new store opening a remodel program.
Like we've got...
But there's more than one store.
Yes.
And we're still opening stores.
Yes.
Well, in that range, I'd say that our expectation is in that range. But by changing the wording and taking out the plural on stores, it's not down to one store. It may not be six, but it's, we still are moving forward with our store opening program.
Okay, thanks. And just switching over to the international segment, can you walk through perhaps if you saw any acceleration in the international segment from Q4 into Q1 particularly in the food business? I'm just a bit surprised to see such a strong same store sales growth given the shift of the February food stamp into Q4. I would have thought the growth would have tapered quite a bit more. Is it perhaps related to the St. Martin store ramping up, or is there a broader theme?
Yeah, so the SNAP compression into January was really felt in Alaska and in Guam. The Alaska business and the Guam market where we have three Costco-less stores. Caribbean, it seemed to be, it didn't show up as much as a strong wage economy right now in St. Croix. Now, that's why we wish we had our St. Thomas store open with the construction economy. And then BVI is not a SNAP market. And then you're right about St. Martin. I mean, it's, some of these numbers, like the comp sales in Alaska, because the liquor store was a side door to a convenience store. It's we didn't call it a comp store on the way up. And on St. Martin, we didn't call it a comp store on the way down. Like when we had the store partially open, it was open, right? So it's getting the comp store is getting a bit of a lift, and they're being hit unfairly the other way on the liquor store, and they're being given a lift in the Caribbean by the St. Martin full reopening. So AC's comp sales are much stronger. Caribbeans are a little lower, but RTW and our USVI business is going really well. St. Croix is going very strong. Cayman is going strong. So, and Cayman's not a snap market either. So the snap comment I made did affect call in the Pacific and was a factor in AC in Alaska.
Okay, thanks. And then just finally on the PFD, could you share with us your outlook for what that could be this year? It just seems that there's some added uncertainty since we last spoke about it a couple quarters ago.
Don't have an update on that. Probably should. We're getting really close. I mean, we expect it to be up, but we don't know how much. And so I can't say anything more. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks so much.
And we'll go to our next caller in queue.
Yes, thanks. I'm going to stick to Giant Tiger for now. And can you just give us a little bit more clarity on the margin side? The shrink issue, was it both a sell-through issue and a theft issue, or is one bigger than the other?
So in produce, we've really doubled down on that business. And if you saw the department before and after, it's night and day. It looks fantastic. The sales are way up. Shrink is up because we've filled all the shelves. We're trying to create a completely different impression with our shoppers that we're more than just a fill-in shopping. For people who live in the neighborhood, we want more destination shopping to take place. And we think produce is the way to go. Now, I think we've been optimistic because we certainly have driven a ton of produce sales. They're up 25 points. And in fact, our GT food business was actually on the positive side. So there's a lot of seasonal GM shortfall behind those numbers as well. But the margin cost in shrink and waste to put that program in place was high. And, you know, we get inside a meeting at Northwest, you're looking at that and saying, okay, when's it going to click in? I'm looking at the basket conversion, and I don't see people buying produce and then going and buying a lot of the things that we can make more money on. So it's something we're not going to go ditch to ditch on, but the cost of it was not planned the way it turned out, and it's a big number. Now, just as big as the meat side. So the meat thesis, again, to get inside one of our meetings, and I apologize if this is too granular, is again tied to if you've got that customer coming in, you have a much stronger opportunity to build a full food basket and ultimately more time in the store and sell the hard goods, soft goods side. It's a tough business. I mean, we're in a discount business. We are switching suppliers. We didn't have the best supply arrangement, but we felt compelled to get into the business, to get back into it. The percentage of customers that have meat in their basket is fairly small, fresh meat. It creates image in the store, which is great. But it's one that more, much more so than produce, it's one that we have to deal with two things. Shrink in terms of waste and shrink in terms of theft. Because it tends to be a higher ticket item. It stands out a bit like a sore thumb compared to everything else we sell in the store, which is pretty low price point. And it's the first thing that we see show up when it comes to shrink. Overlaid on that is we have a lot of stores in Winnipeg. It's a big part of our business. I think it's probably a quarter of our stores. We're in neighborhoods that serve typically middle to lower middle income shoppers. Winnipeg has got a serious issue and challenge with meth addiction. And if you peruse for or just Google the liquor stores or theft in stores in Winnipeg, it's a very, very big problem. And what's going on with the retailers like us is, you know, mitigation of any kind. If you walk into Shoppers Drug Mart down the road from a couple of our stores in North Winnipeg, you'll see that they've taken off the shelf pretty much not just razor blades, but Tide paws, anything that can't be fenced on Facebook or Kijiji. So we haven't gone that far, but the meat is just like a red cape in front of a bull. And that's just a factor that's coming into play here. Like, we're finding it harder to recalibrate programs. And in some respects, those aren't ones that you know, GT East would have those programs, but probably not push them as much as we have. And we have to come back and look at whether are those the right buttons to press, because We didn't expect to have that kind of hit as a result, and we didn't need it, given that the seasonal part of the business is already very soft. It just poured sort of bad margin news on us in Giant Tiger. So we can stomach a lot. Our investors are reasonably patient, but we can't stomach taking those kinds of costs or hits out of a business that we don't think should be like that. And so we're carefully looking, but also decisively making choices. And one thing I haven't brought up is on the expense side. We think there's room to take costs out and still be completely within and true to the franchise model that we're working under and the system. So we've got three-pronged attack here. One is to look at where we've self-inflicted margin costs, where do we take out variable costs, and then working with Giant Tiger, how do we get the maximum value for the royalties we're paying and the relationship that really, you know, again, goes both ways there. It's in their complete interest that we're doing well with these stores.
Okay. All right. And then with, you know, you talked about the meat and the challenges you're having there. Looks like there's a lot of inflation coming as we get into July and August in meat. I'm wondering how you're positioning yourself to handle that when you're already struggling on the meat side.
It's a concern. I mean, we're a price taker, indexed to Walmart, so we're not unaware of that. But we've actually got bigger issues to deal with just on the way we've assorted the category. There's some meats, some cuts and primals will leave the case because we don't think they've carried their weight. And you know, and the good thing is that with or without the meat, we actually have a pretty good food business. Others, if they were in this room, might disagree. Who really lobbied hard to put the meat back in, and we're going to carefully look at what stores it should stay in, and what exact meat should stay in the store. So that's kind of our focus. But you're right, inflation, if it doesn't get picked up and carried by our main competitor, Walmart, would be a concern for us.
Okay. Just on Alaska, can you just give us the exact timing of when the liquor store closed and when barrel store closed?
The liquor store closed in May. The barrel store will close at the end of November.
Okay. And then on the cost side, in the international division, I think it was up 9%, if I remember correctly, on the SG&A side in local currency. I know you've got a higher insurance cost, but you also called out the higher utilities again, but you didn't put a number on that one. Is that anywhere near the same magnitude?
Not the same magnitude, Mike, as the insurance, but both were up significantly. I think in total our insurance costs were up $1.4 million in the quarter, not just international but across the business. And I don't have the actual growth rate on the utilities, but we've seen that continue to rise on both sides, by the way, in Northern Canada and in our international operations.
Thank you.
And we'll go to our next caller in queue.
Oh, hi, it's Stephen McLeod from BMO. I just had two quick follow-up questions. When we went through the Q1 numbers, you know, Ed, you highlighted sort of a lot of these one-time impacts that impacted the quarter, ranging from higher inventory, freight coverage, impact from planes being grounded. You just called out insurance costs this quarter. Is it safe to assume that those other incremental costs have all kind of fallen away between then and now?
Well, the insurance costs we called at the beginning of the year, I said we'd cover it, and the year's not over, so we've got to make up $4 million on the insurance. I think we have the banner strength to do it, not counting Giant Tiger. The NSA has fallen away. When you referred to NSA, you meant like my comments on NSA, there were several factors of NSA, plane utilization and maintenance costs being the two biggest. So that is falling away in terms of stabilized EBIT contribution from that business. The third one you mentioned, I'm sorry, but I drifted away from it. What was the?
Oh, the third one was you talked about freight. You know, this is some of the things you want, freight coverage.
Oh, the freight coverage. Oh yeah, yeah. So that was a one-time nature cost, and then a recalibration on the way we price product to cover off those the risk of an extended breakup or freeze up, and using helicopters longer than trucks on winter roads. So we rechanged our pricing to level that, and so that risk, and we shouldn't see that happen again, and certainly not in 2019.
Okay, that's helpful. And then in terms of NSA, just wanted to get a sense of, you know, you talked about the utilization and maintenance costs. It seems like they've both disappeared. So is it fair to assume that you would still expect that to be in the free cash flow range of kind of $8 to $10 million that you've highlighted in the past?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. And then finally, maybe just one for John. Could you just sort of tell us how much IFRS 16 impacted EBITDA in the quarter?
Sure, it was roughly about $7 million, Stephen. And but I'll point you to the table. So on IFRS, we did implement this standard by restating our prior period. So in the MD&A, there's actually a table that will break that out for you. We've provided the EBITDA metric and the impact on EBIT. The overall impact on net earnings is actually pretty small in the quarter and for the year, but a lot more movement, as you would expect, in EBITDA and earnings from operations. The other thing is with that, we've also provided about 8 pages of financial statement notes. That walk through all of the different adjustments.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I saw that. That's very helpful. I just wasn't sure what the Q1 19 impact. I hadn't seen it in the table, so maybe I'll just take another look. But it was roughly $7 million. You were saying for Q1
yes.
19. Yeah. Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
And we'll go to our next question.
Yeah, hey, it's Neil Linsdale, IA Securities. How you doing? Just want to go back to the Giant Tiger one more time. If memory serves, correct me if I'm wrong, but a couple of years ago you went to Giant Tiger and you'd renegotiated some things where you were getting a lot more material that you were going to be able to source into your other banners. Is that right?
No, that's not right, Neil. We did change some things, but that wasn't part of the agreement. It is a potential win to have that under the right terms in place. And we've had discussions with Giant Tiger about it, and we've had some sourcing in the past. But the what I call the MFA, Master Franchise and Vetting Agreement, didn't specifically obligate them to do that. And I will say that on the table for our northern business is to plug into to a better supply relationship with different non-competing retailers. Doesn't have to be Giant Tiger, but no, that's not the deal with them.
Okay, I was just trying to remember as the relationship has evolved over the years.
Yeah.
You seem to have gone every few years. You go back and you've got some new changes that you want to.
Okay.
I guess. You know, make to the agreement, and I was trying to, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think the real only legal change was the one amendment agreement we did it. That's the one you're referring to. The relationship and how you actually bring these agreements to life in a relationship where both parties aren't like I kind of those for a living. Now, I think we kind of do it more for a living because we're open architected to plug into Tim Hortons, to plug into to whoever, as long as there's a good fit on the plug-in. On their side, they fit like a glove, independent franchisee models. That's the model. And they might suggest that's the secret sauce, but that's not our deal. We're a master franchise running corporate stores. And then we start to say, okay, now how do we adapt? We being us and GTSL. And that's a two-way street. And there are legal obligations going both ways that try to back that up. But it's about really being committed to this because you have to work really close together. You can't take a single franchisee approach. That won't work. And we have to also acknowledge that, you know, what does work for Giant Tiger. How much can we move in that direction to get the financial results that we expect from these stores? And that, I don't think another agreement necessarily is the answer there. But there's going to have to be some understandings about the way we work that are just different than today.
Okay, that's fair enough. And on the costs, I know that you did have some extra lease costs on the aircraft going into this quarter, and you've broken out a lot of the excess costs or one-time costs and one-time adjustments for this quarter. Can you kind of just walk through in total or summarize the one-time costs and one-time adjustments that we saw with all those, you know, the extra aircraft leasing costs and such in this quarter, and then additionally what we might see, you know, Q2, Q3, Q4?
Well, specific to NSA, I'd say that the run rate, I was asked your question of what we should be on a annualized basis on EBIT. We didn't get there in the quarter. We fell a little short because of mostly P1, overutilization of leased aircraft, underutilization of own aircraft. A couple more things that took longer to come into place, but I would say that's not material enough going forward to even break out because if GT was still lagging, if NSA was still lagging in terms of performance, then that would be more material because we'd have, you know, two, three, four periods of these drags. But that drag has largely gone away, so I don't think that's an adjustment worth commenting on. And then the other ones that you were non-specific about, there really is nothing else tied to NSA. The maintenance ramp-ups is relevant, but now we're replacing the external maintenance costs with the ramp-ups. So even that one, you know, it's not switch on and off, but we've transitioned to the point where the maintenance drag, if you will, is not doing that. It's paying for itself like it's supposed to by doing the maintenance for the planes. The mechanics are working, and we're doing what it's supposed to do. So though the fact that's a good news story that we've transitioned from what were, you know, acceptable, but they were explanations that I gave on why NSA had underperformed. But we've now covered them off, and when I look at this, I'm confident, but I'm also looking at more periods, and it's just, I think, a natural thing to do is to say I want to see more periods under our belt, and hopefully I'll sound even more confident when we're talking in September.
Okay, so to summarize, other than the insurance adjustment and the stock-based compensation adjustment, there was no other material one-time charges that we should take.
I think the office restructuring was borderline at $1.3 million, and with a forecast of $4 million for the year.
Yeah. And you picked up the gain in there as well, right, Neil? Of course. Is it?
Yes. Yeah, the insurance gain you're talking about. Okay, I just want to clear that up. Thanks.
And we have no further questions at this time.
Okay, just waiting to make sure. If that's the case, thanks very much, everyone, for your time and your questions today. Please reach out to John or myself if you have any follow-up. Look forward to having you on our call in September. We'll be up in Thompson, Manitoba, with our board, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks very much.
And that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. You may now disconnect.